Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey, roofing contractors. Welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. You can find more tips, strategies, and free downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. Today, I've got a great interview with Greg Hain with the Hain Coaching Group. Greg has a unique training program that helps roofing contractors grow their service departments and become more profitable, and provide superior service for their customers. For the past 10 years, he's been teaching contractors the best practices of the most successful service departments around the country. We had a good-sized and very profitable service department in my company, and really could have used some of these tips. If you're not marketing and selling preventative maintenance service to your roofing clients, you are really missing the boat. There's some great information on his website at creatinggreatservice.com. He has a download. You can plug in your numbers and see how much money you're leaving on the table. So I recommend you check that out. The Hain Coaching Group also provides executive coaching to key leaders in a company. They also facilitate industry peer groups so that companies can benefit from the group's collective experience, buying power, and accountability. I've been in a number of these peer groups over the years, and that was always a big help in growing my business. So I recommend you get hold of Greg on that at haincoachinggroup.com. So let's jump into the interview and learn how you can make a lot of money providing great service. Hey, thanks for coming onto the show today, Greg. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
You got it. Well, I was down in Vegas at the Roof Expo last month, and I saw your talks, I saw your booth, you had some great information there. You talked about how to set up a service department and also how to sell preventative maintenance. That was some great information, and that's what I wanted to have you on the show today to kind of get into that. But first, let's talk about service and what great service looks like. Because I go to a dozen of contractor websites, and they all say pretty much the same thing. We've got quality products. We've got good prices, blah, blah, blah. But they always say they've got great service. And I think what you're saying to me is that's not necessarily true. What does great service look like?
Well, first of all, I'm not aware of any websites I've ever gone to where a contractor says we give crappy service, we're poor on communication, and we never find leaks. They all say they're great. And so respectfully, I would suggest to all the contractors to talk about those things. You're just wasting time. Nobody pays any attention to that.
Exactly.
The observation I would make is that roofing contractors, first and foremost, do not understand that there is a difference between having a repair department, which focuses on the repairing of leaks in the roof, and having a service department, which gives service. They're not the same thing. Now, the guys in the field may be spending 98% of their time fixing holes in the roof, but service is about everything else that goes along with that process. How fast you communicate what you found to an owner, how you follow up with them, you find other things that need to be taken care of. The selling of preventive maintenance is important to a knowledgeable owner anyway. All of those things are what differentiates you in the marketplace, not whether or not you can find a hole in the roof.
Right, different than a little, hey, we patch roofs, that's about it. You send a guy out there with a ladder and a pickup truck, and away they go.
Right.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. We had a pretty good-sized service company. It did 20% of our business and accounted for 50% of our profits. That's a great thing, and this is why I think contractors really have to take a hard look at that.
Well, and you know, the thing I think is interesting, Dave, is that let's think about this. 20% of the sales, 50% of the profit. Now, I would think that the people that are listening to this webinar should be falling out of their chairs when they hear that.
They should be.
But they don't. This is the thing that's so fascinating to me. They don't. They all tell me, well, we want to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace. Typically, when I start giving them suggestions as to how they can go about doing that, one of which would be develop a true service department, nothing happens.
Right.
I find that interesting, very interesting. But yes, 20% of the sales, 50% of the profit. Well, and not only that, but there was less risk involved.
Exactly. A lot fewer things can go wrong rather than doing re-roofing. I really agree with that. So let's get into how do we set up a service department and why contractors would want to do it. I know from my standpoint, it takes a real commitment of time and investment of money, but the payoff is huge. So how would somebody go about setting one up?
Growing a service department from nothing is a challenge. There's no question about that. But what we have discovered in our work with contractors is that there are a couple of components that absolutely positively have to be in place for you to get some traction on this. And the first of these is that the owner of the company, the boss, has to be involved in this.
Absolutely.
This is not something that you can delegate. And when I work with contractors that have an established repair department, they want to turn it into a service department, and the boss walks in and tells the service manager, okay, do these things, it doesn't happen. It never happens unless the boss is engaged. And one of the reasons for that is that the guy that is ideally suited to running a good service department, doing all the things that need to happen in a service department and doing them well, is the wrong guy to grow it. The personality, the skill sets necessary are almost literally the opposite of what you need for one for the other. So if they've got the guy that can make a service department run, he can't grow it. And again, they have to have the right people engaged in the process.
Right. And they've got to
be. And most don't.
Exactly. And they've got to be trained in service. And what we really found, the way that we did it was, and eventually, you're going to want to break this out as a separate profit center. It's like having a separate company, and you're going to have different people, you're going to have different procedures, and it takes those special people to make that thing work.
Yes, absolutely. They do need to have a separate accounting system at some point. Once you get one or two, the first contractor I ever trained, when I trained him, he had two trucks, and 2 years later, he had six.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in that process, they said, geez, we're starting to make money here. We need to start tracking this as a separate business model. And so they set up a separate business entity within their accounting system to track this stuff. And they need to do that. And of course, the other thing that this allows you to do, it allows you to begin to track how much money you're actually making. Because if you're not measuring it, you're not managing it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. How do they figure this out financially? How do they charge for it? How much? What have you seen in your experience?
Well, if you're going to send somebody out to do a repair, and let's say that your cost for that guy in his check is $20 an hour. So he's getting $20 an hour in his check. Okay, now you've got hourly fringes on that. You've got FICA feuder, workers' comp. There may be health insurance. There may be pension contribution. And we're going to assume for this conversation that the hourly chargeables add up to 50% of that or so. So now he costs you $30. His wages plus his fringes cost you $30. If he's costing you $30, you should be billing at 90. Your direct cost for that guy times three should be your approximate bill out rate. Now, if you're in Chicago and you're a union contractor, and your cost for that guy is $80 an hour, which actually might be the case, no, you can't bill at 240. That won't fly. But for most contractors in most regions of the country, that is a very good formula, and it works. And typically, if you're not making three times their way, you're not going to be generating the kind of profits that you need to be making. You need to be generating a gross profit on your time and material leak repairs of at least 50%. And when you start doing preventive maintenance, you need to be generating gross profits on preventive maintenance of at least 65%. And if you're not, you're not charging enough.
Right. And that's the biggest problem I see with these contractors. You're just not charging enough, because that's the kind of numbers that you need to be making on your gross profit. We charge $95 an hour, have two guys in a truck, and we made some great margins. But if you provide good service, you do the right things. I've never had anybody gripe about the price. And you got to get a lot of price, because there's a lot of burden and a lot of overhead that goes along with, because you're getting those reports out, doing all the this and that. You've got to have some high margins.
Well, those aren't high margins. Those are minimum margins.
Yeah, that's true. So you basically take a look at it generally, two guys to a truck. You look at it as far as growing your service department. Maybe you're starting off with one or two trucks, a couple of guys, full time. And I noticed you have a spreadsheet on your website at creatinggreatservice.com, which I think is great. I suggest our contractors take a look at this, because you can basically plug in the number of trucks you've got, what you're charging per hour, just fill in the blanks. It's going to do the math for you, and you're going to be pretty startled at the kind of numbers, the sales and the margins that you can make by having this service department.
There are contractors out there that have service departments that if you would have a conversation with the typical roofer and tell them how much money these guys were making, they wouldn't believe it. They just wouldn't believe it. But yes, we have that information available on the website. We also have it in the literature we do. And the typical roofing contractor, if he's, you can ratio these things, but a very common rate in the country right now is about $70 an hour. And the typical roofing contractor ought to be generating at least $250,000 a year, putting two men in a truck. If he's not generating at least $250,000 with that truck, and I'm assuming that that truck is running most of the time when I say that, but he's doing something wrong.
Right.
And there's guys out there that generate, based upon that same $70 an hour rate, there's guys out there that generate $500,000 with truck or more. The difference between that 250 and that 500 is net profit.
Exactly.
This isn't, because the guys are out there 40 hours a week and the truck's 50 weeks a year. Your costs don't change. What changes the amount of money you get paid. And the difference is these guys are all effectively selling preventive maintenance.
Right. And I want to get into that in a minute, because that work is out there, but you have to market it. And you have to go out and sell it, and you have to really explain to your building owners how this makes sense. But before we get into that, what are some of the problems that you see? So we're going to set up this department where a few trucks out there running. There's also on the downside, I hear a lot of complaints from building owners about how these guys screw it up. So what are some of the problems that you see? I know that you work with a lot of building owners. What kind of feedback are you getting from them about what pisses them off about roofers?
So in 2016, the IRE contacted me and asked me to create a customer service workshop for roofers, which I agreed to do.
Which was a great class, by the way, because I checked that out.
Thank you. And I got to thinking about this, and I said, you know, the roofers are going to come and they're going to have all these things they want help with, and that's all good. But my experience is most of the time what they think they need help with isn't what they really need help with. So what I decided to do was to do a survey of knowledgeable building owners. I'm a roofing consultant. I've got clients that I work with that they're really good at managing their properties. And so I reached out to my clients, building owner clients, and talked to the good property managers. I said, hey, send me an email with your three biggest gripes about roofers. I got this input from owners. And when I walked into the customer service workshop, I said, well, guys, you know, you all are here to have your questions answered. But I want to tell you what you really need to be focused on. there were five things that came up. And the first of these was that a contractor does not treat "it's leaking again" repair requests any differently than the initial request.
Right.
Either does not treat it differently or does not communicate to us on the ownership side what will be different. Notice, if as you listen to this, none of these complaints are they didn't find it the first time. A knowledgeable building owner understands that you don't always get it the first time. And by the way, if you track this, you ought to be getting it right the first time about 95% of the time or more. But the other 5%, there's going to be callbacks. And they're concerned about how you handle the callbacks. Tell us what's going to be different. So that's number one.
I just want to say something on that one, which my experience has been, and this is a communication issue where if they get a leak in the roof, it's the same leak, whether it's 100 feet away or you get a lot of that. So you're going to have to explain clearly that this is a different leak. This isn't the same thing. But I just wanted to throw that in because I find that a lot of building owners are saying that, hey, my roof's leaking. You were out there repairing the roof before. It's leaking in the same spot. Yeah, you sure about that? But anyway, yeah.
No, and you still have to go.
Sure.
And about 5% of your calls, if you're any good, 5% or less of your calls are going to be like that.
And that's true.
The second thing that my owners told me is this. The roofer is unable to tell us when he will be able to actually service the leak request. And then they go on to say, we call or email multiple times requesting when we can expect his crew to appear and get no response.
Oh, geez.
Now, I understand how roofers often don't know. I mean, they may get a larger service company in Florida after a rain may get 300 phone calls. And I get that they may not be able to tell everybody instantly when they're going to be there. The flip side of this is when you call the auto place to have your oil changed and you call in there and they say, hey, I want to have my oil changed. They don't say to you, we have no idea where we can work you in. Why don't you just drop the car off and we'll get to it when we can and then call you?
Right.
That's not the way it works. Okay. And your owner and your clients expect to have some information. When we have owners calling or emailing roofers multiple times requesting when can we expect the crew and don't get any response, they not only don't say, we're not sure, they don't even respond to the email.
Right.
Okay. That's not acceptable.
I always felt that if a client has to call you, you've screwed up because that should never have to happen because you should be in touch with them and they understand if you get a huge rainstorm and just go, hey, I'm not sure when we're going to be able to get out there, but I'm going to keep in touch with you. Let me bang some of these things out and we'll let you know and keep you informed along the way. But if they're calling you saying, hey, when are you going to come out there? You've got a real problem when it comes to service.
Yes, and it's a big deal. The third item on the list was poor documentation. The documentation either has poor quality photos, no map or aerial showing where the repair was made on the roof, or the documentation does not appear promptly enough or at all, or all of the above. And we could spend a long time talking about documentation, but if you're sending out an invoice, you have to be sending out before and after pictures, and you need to be providing some sort of an aerial or a drawing marked to show where the repair was made. So the problem was in an HVAC, was near an HVAC unit. Fine. Which one? There's nine of them up there. And why is that important? Because if there's an HVAC issue, they want to know which HVAC unit is it. Because often the person that you're talking to at a location is not the person that is going to be receiving your communication. So you have to spell that sort of stuff out. We could talk a whole hour on that.
Exactly. And a lot of those AC leaks and so forth, too, they could be charging the tenant. They can be doing a chargeback. And if you can show them that, hey, this is not something that should be covered under the roof. This is a tenant problem, and you should charge them for that.
That's right. But if you don't give them pictures showing the water inside the unit, if you don't identify which roof it's on,
right?
I mean, there's so many things that can influence this, you can't equip them to do it. And if they have to call you and ask for this, you failed.
Right. And this is something that if you're going to sell this work properly, the first thing you want to do is we're going to handle this roof. We're not just going out there and slapping some wet patch on there. We want this account. How long does it take to do a quick takeoff of a Google map, set this up and say, okay, hey, if nothing else, here's your leaks. We're going to keep this in the file. We're going to keep an eye on things and we're going to service your roof rather than just going out there and being a leak stopper.
Yes. Moving on. The fourth complaint was that the roofer does not handle tenant communication properly. Now, a lot of owners are going to be there, but it still applies. The roof techs either do not talk to the occupant of the building at all, or they talk to the occupant and they say the wrong thing.
Right. You need a new roof.
Yes. The worst, if a roof tech walks down a ladder and the person standing at the bottom of the ladder says, what's going on? And the roof tech says, well, you need a new roof. They should be fired.
Exactly.
Okay. And then the last item that my owners gave me was that the contractor ignores or otherwise not report to us other potential roof issues he sees while making leak repairs. In other words, a knowledgeable building owner wants us as roofers to help manage the roof. When the crew's up there, they found the hole, they fixed it, and over here, oh my goodness, look at this mess. The crew needs to do a takeoff. They need to take pictures. They need to turn it in, and you need to report this to the owner. Now, there's contractors that do this, and this is for preventive maintenance type stuff, and the complaint's going to be that, well, we don't get these approved. That's a different conversation. Owners want to know if they have problems up there. So those are the five main items.
And let me throw in a couple of other things that always amaze me. To keep it simple, these are the basics, the absolute no-brainers that contractors should be doing where they screw up so often. This is, as you say, not returning phone calls. You got to return phone calls. I mean, that's just a given. And you got to do it promptly. And that should really be done within a couple hours or certainly by the end of the day.
Yes, but let's think about this. If you, Mr. Roofing Contractor, get a phone call from a general contractor saying, hey, I need a price on a job. Are you interested in bidding it? You say yes. And then you call your supplier. Say, hey, I need a price on some ISO and some PPO. Call me. And he doesn't call you for 4 days, or he doesn't return your call at all. Would that be okay with you? And every time I've talked to groupers like this, they go, well, heck no. But yet it's okay for you to do that with a building owner? No, it's not. It's the same thing. The expectations that you have as a roofing contractor of the people that supply you of services are exactly the same as your customers have of you. They're not asking for anything special. They're asking for the same things that you expect. You just need to provide it.
Absolutely. Confirming an appointment, getting out and communicating with these building owners or tenants or what have you. You've got to communicate, confirm your appointments. Maybe he's there, maybe he's not. You don't want to waste your time or waste their time. And getting the bills out. This is always amazing to me also, is that you do the work and somebody's got to beg you to send them the bill. How crazy is that? Cash flow is one of the biggest problems we have in this business.
Well, and the other piece of this is an invoice is not just a request for money. It is a communication document. Your invoice should explain to somebody what has happened. And for instance, if it's an HVAC unit, you can't fix that. So they've sent you out there, and you're not communicating to them, and it rains, it leaks again, it rains, it leaks again. They think you can't find the leak. They're upset with you. Maybe they send you out there again, and you go back out there again. It's a fiasco.
Right.
And again, you call the people to have them change the oil on your truck and you drop it off Monday morning. They call you Monday afternoon. They say your truck is done. We'll have the invoice ready for you Thursday.
Right.
Come pick it up then. I mean, that's insane.
It really
is. Your invoices need to go out within 24 hours of the time the repair was complete, if not sooner. I have a contractor I work with in Michigan. They're out on a roof at 8 o'clock in the morning for us, and they're done at 10. We have the invoice at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to turn.
That's the way it ought to be.
Exactly. You got to turn those around And not to mention, you got to get paid. It's a cash flow issue. I've seen contractors, I mean, they can't get a bill out for a month. It's nuts. But we could talk about these problems all day.
Oh, absolutely.
But let's take a look at preventative maintenance, because there's another huge opportunity that I think contractors miss. Selling preventative maintenance is a great opportunity, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. So could you talk about a little about that for us?
Sure. So I did at the 2017 IRE, I did a presentation on house salt preventive maintenance, and I've done this before at other trade shows. It's very well attended. Everybody's very excited about this. They think this is great. They listen to my talk. They say, oh, this is great information, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing that they don't understand. The first thing that they need to understand is that you will not be successful at selling preventive maintenance if you cannot do all of the other things that we just talked about. If it's taking you 2 weeks to get out an invoice, if it's taking you a couple of weeks to get out a proposal for preventive maintenance, if your documentation is crappy, you will not be successful at selling preventive maintenance. So assuming all of this other stuff is taken care of, if you want to sell preventive maintenance, there's a couple of things that you need to do. And the first is, do not overspecify your services. And when I teach the class that I teach, I pull up a quote from a roofing contractor with $35,000 worth of recommended repairs on a shopping center that has never leaked. And most contractors wildly overspecify what needs to be done. And my analogy is that you call the roofer because you have a scratch on the right rear quarter panel of your car. And what he does is he quotes painting the whole car, changing the brakes, putting new tires on, all new upholstery, an upgraded radio, and tint the windshield. No, you quote the repair of that right rear quarter panel scratch. Roofers go up there and they end up with a quote for $35,000 on a shopping center that's never leaking. And then they're surprised when it doesn't happen. The other thing that they don't understand is about selling preventive maintenance is the word sell. Most contractors' idea of selling preventive maintenance is to put together a quote, load it up into an email, and click send it off. That is not selling. That's quoting.
Right.
There are contractors out there who have corporate-wide closure rates, because they track this, of at least 65% of their proposals. In other words, if they send out 100 proposals for preventive maintenance, they get back 65 approved. If you're not doing that, you're doing something wrong, and the first thing you're probably doing wrong is you're probably quoting too much. The second thing you're probably doing wrong is you're quoting, not selling. You're just sending quotes in. The third thing you're probably doing wrong is you're expecting your service estimators, the people preparing these quotes, to sell. The reality is the guys that are good at estimating can't sell. The people that can sell should sell, and they should have the estimates done by somebody else.
I totally agree.
There are organizations. There are roofers. And when I talk about a 65% closure rate, I'm talking about contractors who are using estimators to sell. They could probably do better if they had real salesmen.
Yeah, that's throughout the industry. It's estimators. You don't have estimators out there in front of customers. You've got to have salespeople because you've got to go out and sell these things.
You do have to sell. And when I look at the contractors that are truly, really successful at this, they do that. Mm-hmm. And a good example of this, Cinemark. Cinemark is the largest roofing contractor in the country. The last time I looked, they had over $450 million in sales. And there are a lot of roofing contractors that don't have a lot of good things to say about Cinemark in terms of the quality of their work and things like that. And I'm not going to comment on whether I agree with that or not, but here's the thing. They have sales of hundreds of millions of dollars. They do know how to sell. And I can assure you, they're making money. You can complain about it, but the fact of the matter is, your quality may in fact be better than theirs. But you know what? They get the work because they can outsell you.
And I think you need to sell this as, this is going to make you money. I mean, you go out there, this thing's leaking, you've got interior damage, you get frustration, you add up all these leaks. It's a lot of money where you could go out. And the way that we did it, which I think was pretty successful for us, was we loved getting on a 10, 12-year-old roof. Because what we would do, and that was kind of our target, we'd try to get out there to 15 years old. And we wanted to control that deal. So what we would do is say, okay, we're going to bring your roof up to a maintainable condition. All that meant was, we're going to fill the pitch pockets. We're going to do a little of this, do a little of that. You're right about do not oversell it. But you can get that roof in a maintainable condition. And we had a set price to do that. And we itemized and we made it pretty clear. Then from there on, we got them on a maintenance contract that was a more reasonable but a very profitable contract. Each year, we'd go out, take a look at the roof, make sure there wasn't any damage from repairmen, on and on. And that worked out great for us. Here it goes on, you know, the roof's starting to get old, and great opportunity. We'd sell coating systems, maintenance systems, but when the roof did have to be replaced, we're the guy that's been working on it for 5 years. We're going to get that job.
Or at least the last look.
That's right. The worst position we want to be in is to get the last look. And we'll take that if that's all we can get.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Now, let's talk about documentation, because that is such a problem. I've seen these reports come back. You're looking at a problem on the roof, whether it's a pitch pin or just a bullet hole or something small. They're 6 inches away from this repair they're making. Well, they take a picture of this and say, hey, here's where the leak was. Well, you can't tell anything by doing that. I mean, wouldn't you agree that the photo taking is critical, where not only would you have a before and after shot, but take a step back and get some perspective where this is happening, what this looks like. So the property manager understands what's going on. You're telling a story and they understand, okay, here's the problem, here's how you fixed it, and this is where it's at. Does that make sense?
It does, and one of the ways an aerial or a marked drawing comes in is because if you have a drawing of the roof, whether it's an aerial or a handmade drawing, you can show them by, you can mark on them, and you can show where the repair has been made, and if it's near an HVAC unit, you can show which HVAC unit it's near, and you can also give them an idea how close that puncture was to that HVAC door. And from our perspective, we will not accept documentation if there's not photos, appropriate before and after photos, and some sort of a marked drawing or aerial showing where the repair was made. My owners are all trained that if they get in, no pictures, no drawing, no pay. And here's the other thing. Contractors have said to me, well, we don't normally send out pictures. We'll do that for you. I got news. There has never been an occasion when a contractor has done that successfully. If you are not sending out photos and aerials or whatever with every single invoice, you are cheating your customers. Look, just because a contractor just said something to me the other day, he said, well, they don't ask us to do that. No, they don't. But service is about giving people what they need, whether they know it or not. And if you start sending out the stuff that they need, pretty soon they'll expect it. And by gosh, that's a way to begin to differentiate yourself from your competition.
Right. Now, one thing I want to add that really makes sense also is that a new roof replacement is a capital cost. And by doing preventative maintenance, by doing good service work, that's an expense to the building owner. So if you can keep that roof, and that's what we would say, we can extend the life of this roof for another 5 years by investing a little money in here. That generally makes sense. And to explain that to a building owner and sell that concept, that's something that really worked for us.
My experience is that professional building managers are very smart people. They look at everything. They don't care about what's going on the roof. They don't care if it's rubber or plastic or TPO or buildup. They care about money. And if you can show them ways to save money, that's going to get their attention. But what you're talking about here, Dave, is you're talking about someone going in and sitting down and having an intelligent conversation with an owner about how by making appropriate repairs on a roof, you can cost effectively extend the life of the roof.
Right.
This is not about how you fix a leak. It's about how you save money. And ultimately, to be successful selling preventive maintenance, you have to show people how it's going to save them money. And if you show them how it's going to save them money, they're going to do it. And if you don't show them how they're going to save money, they're not going to do it.
Right. Now, what are some of the common mistakes that you see when contractors are trying to sell this service? And what's going to screw up the sale that you've seen?
Number one, they specify too much. Number two, they're sending in quotes rather than actually, quote unquote, selling it. One-on-one conversation. They do not ask questions. They don't make any attempt to find out what the plans are for the building, what makes sense. You know, the roof's 18 years old. We can probably get a few more years out of it. Are you planning to keep the building? Are you planning to sell it? You're going to sell this building in 2 years? Well, then we'll stretch this roof.
Or tear it down.
Or tear it down. One of my clients is a grocery chain. One of the conversations, they call me on the phone, we're getting ready to expand the store. So can we get 2 more years out of this roof? Yeah, we can get 2 more years out of it. Then they wait 2 more years, they rip it off and put it on as part of the capital expenditure for the addition. There's all sorts of stuff. And most roofing contractors are completely oblivious to all these things, don't ask questions about these things, and then or construct proposals that are not going to be considered because they don't fit the needs of the client. And to do that, you don't expect an estimator to figure that stuff out. You expect a salesperson to figure that out.
One thing I'd like to add that about selling preventative maintenance, and particularly when it comes to maintenance contracts, you've got reoccurring income where you can count on that coming in year after year, every 6 months. But when it comes to adding value to your business and for the eventual sale of your company, if you've got a maintenance department that is constantly kicking out reoccurring income that can be counted on, that is going to add a lot of value to your business.
Absolutely.
So I think we've got some great stuff here, Greg. Tell us about what you do, because I know that you've got training programs and you spend a lot of time working with contractors. Now, do you get into setting up service departments for contractors, or tell me about what type of services you have?
My background is that I'm first and foremost a roofing consultant. And so I work with building owners that have properties scattered over wide geographic areas. And so I work with contractors all over the country. We spend 3 weeks putting on a roof, but we spend 20 years living with it. So I'm far more concerned with the service department I'm going to be dealing with after a roof is put on than I am with who's putting on a roof. And what I've discovered over the years is some contractors have better service departments than others, obviously, but some of them have been extraordinary. And when we run across these companies, they're so good that we've given them as much business as we can. Let me say that again. We give them as much business as we can. And finally, I said, I want to figure out why these guys are so good and these other guys are so bad. So I started interviewing them, and eventually I built a training program, which is called Creating Great Service. And so the way that works is if you have at least 3 full-time service vans and a full-time service manager, you would be a candidate for this. And what we do is we go in and we train for a day, and then we help you implement the best practices that we teach, and we support that for at least a year. And as I said, the first contractor I trained went from 2 trucks to 6 trucks in 2 years, and his sales per truck went up, they think, about 40%. They were happy.
I would think. You know,
and not everybody does that, but they did. All right. And others have had similar success. I have a contractor that last year grew their service department by almost 30% over a 3-month period when it didn't rain the whole time.
Wow.
And that's because they used the skills that we gave them in terms of selling preventive maintenance and so forth. So that's one of our offerings. The other offering we have is I've become a clearinghouse. Because if I have a client and I'm working with the roofer and he asks me a question, you know, I don't know the answer to that. That's not something I've run across before, but I know a whole bunch of roofers that know how to solve that problem. And so I call them and they tell me what to do. And so then I call my client back and tell them, and I realize I'm a clearinghouse for information. And so what I said is, rather than handle it this way, why don't I just get all these contractors together a couple times a year and let's meet for a day and a half and work on our businesses. And so we started facilitating industry peer groups where we get contractors in the $0 to $5 million range, 5 to 15, 15 to 30, so forth, who are non-competing from different geographic areas together three times a year for a day and a half. And we work on business. We share best practices. We share financial statements. We prepare a composite financial statement so you can see how you compare to the average, work on best practices. And the members ultimately determine the agendas for the content of these meetings. But Dun & Bradstreet did a survey a few years ago, and they determined that contractors that are in facilitated peer groups grow their businesses 3.5 times faster than those that don't. And so we are in the process of beginning this to facilitate these. And so we facilitate, we're also a coach. We use our coaching skills, both in our training work and also in the peer groups. And we do some individual coaching. So that's basically what we do. The best way to find out about this is to go to websites. One is for the training program. The training program has its own website, and that is creatinggreatservice.com. And our peer groups can be found at HaineCoachingGroup.com.
I just want to jump in here on this. I've been involved with peer groups for years, and I'll tell you, it is the greatest thing you can do for your business. Because one problem that we have as contractors, I mean, we're out there alone blowing in the wind. We don't have people that we can talk to, our friends, our family. Nobody understands what it's like to go through the day-to-day problems that we face. It's not like you can go talk to your competitors necessarily, but when you can get a group together and talk about the problems that you have, because we're all going through the same thing. Somebody's got an answer for this, or this is what worked for me. And you could just learn so much. It's really unbelievable. And I cannot recommend these peer groups enough. And I think you're right on the spot on that.
And I have an anecdotal story for you. So I know of a peer group that is composed, and I'm not involved in this, it's composed of large roofing contractors. I believe each of the contractors in this group have sales of at least $30 million a year. Now, let's be clear about this. These are really smart guys. These are really well-run companies. But one of the members of this group told me that he discovered that by talking with other people in his group, that he wasn't getting all the discounts that he was eligible to receive from roofing system manufacturers, the Firestones, the Carlisles, Johns Manville, GF. They have these programs, and he wasn't getting all the discounts he was entitled to. And he told me that after he learned that, he was recouping an additional $100,000 a year. And now, obviously, smaller contractors may not recoup that much, but I assure you, that's a lot of money to anybody. And so the value that comes from this sort of thing is amazing.
Yeah, I think you can recoup the cost of doing this 10 times over. And it provides you a real shortcut to get where you're trying to go with your business. And there's a lot fewer bumps in the road by doing it too. You can learn from others' mistakes and avoid a lot of these pitfalls. It's a great service.
Yes.
That's great, Greg. I really appreciate you coming on. That's some great information for our contractors. And I suggest you get hold of Greg and check some of these things out. Go to his website. The website's information will be in the show notes. You can check that out there. Give Greg a call. And I followed Greg for a long time. This guy knows what he's talking about. So thanks so much, Greg. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Dave. Anytime.
You bet. Thanks.
Have a good one.
That's it for today's show. If you want to get a copy of my new guide, 7 Steps to Getting More Qualified Leads for Your Roofing Business, go to my website at theroofershow.com, where you can grab it for free or click on the link in the show notes below. And as always, thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. We'll see you next time on The Roofer Show.